Well, here's a fact. There are approximately 30 million people in the United States of America now unemployed. Here's another fact. Farmers in the United States cannot find enough people to work on their farms, and consequently, some of our food is rotting in their fields. This disparity of facts leads us to once again ask, where are the farm workers?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 788th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Cabo San Lucas, who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metroforum.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Ricochet on the boards. Hello, Rick.
Good day, Michael.
Folks, a great disparity has settled upon us here in the United States of America. On one hand, approximately 22% of us are now unemployed. That means about 30 million of us, give or take, are not working, with many more of us underemployed. On the other hand, farmers cannot find enough work enough people to work on their farms. According to the Western Growers Association, the number of workers available to work in the fields this year has fallen by 20% this year alone. Workers have become so scarce, in fact, that some of our food is now going to rot in the fields. We are out of work, and we are out of workers. This disparity leads us to ask, where are the farm workers? On the last edition of the Food Chain, we put this question to Ann Lopez, who is the director of the Center for Farm Worker Families. This week, we turn to a grower himself, strawberry grower and other berry grower, Tom Omrine, past president of the Santa Cruz County Farm Bureau. Tom, welcome aboard.
Good morning.
Hey, you know, you're the second generation of Omrines to be on the Food Chain. Gosh, a long time ago, way down in the hundreds somewhere, we featured your father, Ray, who was an attorney, and we talked about land use issues. So here you are, the son of an attorney, and you have turned back to agriculture. Your grandfather was a farmer. Your father said, I'm not going to be a farmer, and he became an attorney. And you went back to agriculture. How do you why didn't you run away and become another attorney or something?
Well, I think that's because for my dad, I don't think his heart never really left the farm. And, you know, it was more an issue of coming from the Midwest in the 30s and the Dust Bowl. And he came out to California right before the war started. And it was actually already in the Navy and whatnot before Pearl Harbor, working with the Navy, for the Navy. And then got the GI Bill afterwards, and that got him into law school. So in those days, it was you should get out off the farm if you could. But you know, I think he always wanted the farm. You know?
What changed that? You said, well, I could get off the farm, but I'm not good. I'm going to go back to agriculture as the next generation. I ask out of curiosity because I was one of those who left the farm because I could. And I always think, well, maybe I shouldn't have. And you didn't. You turned back to agriculture. What was it in you that made you do that?
Well, I think it's because it was really challenging. If you're kind of high energy person, you want to get out and work, you know, like physical work. I mean, it was just about, man, it was all about machinery and getting out in the field and getting going in the morning and, you know, taking a piece of dirt and making it grow something. I mean, that was cool, you know. And it, you know, as years go by, we get farther away from that and the way it's changed. But that's what started it.
Yeah. Good. And you've been in the berry patch, growing berries for a long time. How long?
I started in 1981. Yep.
Long time. Let's talk a little bit about berry farming and labor. Out here in California, we have huge crops in the specialty areas like berries and lettuce, greens, and whatnot. Back in the Midwest, you know, one farmer can now grow 1,000 acres of soybeans thanks to such things as herbicides and genetically engineered crops. You know, a farmer can sit in the air-conditioned cab of his tractor and read a novel, essentially, and while everything else happens. But not quite that way in the berry patch, is it?
No, there's been a lot of technology introduced, but it's been more along the lines of certainly on the tillage side, the tillage work side. So, there's, you know, everything now is laser guided, a lot of it started out being with the land leveling was laser, which was a big help using laser beams and the GPS. Now with the advancement in GPS, even all of your row work is done, you know, centered around the GPS system. So you get a lot of efficiency that way.
Not a crooked row in agriculture.
Not a crooked row anymore, unless that GPS goes off the satellite goes crooked or something. Mm-hmm. But that's been one of the big changes. But there's a picture in our boardroom there where we have a picture of a Japanese family picking strawberries, right? And it was in 1942, right before they went to the camps. And this is up in San Jose. And you put that picture next to people picking strawberries today, and it looks the same. They're really very, you know, nothing's really changed at that level. It hasn't been mechanized. Oxnard in Southern California, they are using what they call harvest aid machines, which carry the crate for the people. And there's some advancements that way. And we also have a robotic harvester now that's in California that's being looked at that has been created in Spain. And that's actually can pick a strawberry. It's pretty amazing. And,
really?
So
can it pick the ripe?
Yes.
Strawberry?
It's quite amazing what that machine can do, but it's still a ways away from any kind of commercial, because you have to build the production system around the machine. How you plant the berries, it has to go on a trellis or a trough system, and it's quite more horticulture than agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
But it can pick a strawberry.
Maybe you would define that difference for people who are wondering, what the heck did he just say?
Yeah, well, I would say, I guess I use the term horticulture when you think of more of a highly control growing system like a greenhouse. When you think of the floriculture and the greenhouses and stuff being grown on benches and hydroponics and all of that, you have to apply all those resources into strawberries in order to be able to use something like a robotic harvester, as opposed to open field production, which is what we do now.
So then that would mean that you buy this machine and then you have to design your whole farm.
Right.
Around the machine.
Yes, and the varieties, too. It will require a whole new set of genetics, select for different characteristics on the fruit.
That's interesting. Yeah. That could be very interesting,
yeah,
given
yeah.
what they can do with genetically engineered
yeah.
crops.
Just to be clear, there is no GMO in strawberries, and nobody's going that way, just to be clear on that.
Okay, fair enough. So how are you going to vote on California's Proposition 37 as a farmer? Will you vote to require agriculture and food processors to label their crops with GMOs?
No.
You will vote against that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair enough. Let's turn to ag labor and farm labor, especially on berry farms. With respect to berries, is there indeed, as I have mentioned and asserted, a shortage of labor?
Yes, in the strawberry industry, in the last couple of years, there's been a tension in the supply, and this year there's really been a noticeable shortage in all districts. There's been a loss of production, or production being transferred from, let's say, the high end, you know, the fresh market into a secondary market, like a freezer juice being stripped because you can't keep up to keep it in the higher end usages. So
when you say a higher end usage, when you pick a strawberry,
high value,
when high value, the strawberry has to really look good,
right,
before somebody's going to pay a lot of money at the supermarket or whatever.
It has to be the right quality and condition, and then if you don't have enough labor, you get out of your picking cycle, and you can't. So you've still got a nice strawberry, but it's not going to make that. You know, it's not going to make the ride to New York City. Well, then you end up having to pick it to be, you know, go into a juice product or a frozen product or a puree, which is still a high-quality product, but it's lower value.
And it has to compete with China.
To some extent, yes.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So that's tougher then. Yep. So you really want to get that fresh berry. Mm-hmm. Only way to do it right now, then, is with an educated hand.
Yes, that's
where are they?
Well, that's a good question. We'd actually thought
it used to be the $64,000 question, but now it's the $64 million question.
Yeah, it's a big question. If you'd asked me, you know, 4 or 5 years ago where we were going to be with labor, I would have thought today we would be in a lot worse situation than we are. And with the economic collapse and the collapse of the construction industry and the tourism industry, which is the hotels and stuff, particularly in the West.
Well, 30 million people unemployed.
Yeah, it's particularly in the West. A lot of people that were in those industries came back to ag. That's where they'd started. So they came back in and they've kind of kind of buttressed our labor supply in a way that we didn't expect. But it's catching up with us, because what's happening is our population continues to grow. Fresh food, fresh vegetable and fruit consumption grows faster than the population. So we're producing.
Why is that?
That's just a trend of that health. People are, you know, more focused on health, and particularly the berry category is growing very rapidly.
So we want more fresh fruits and vegetables. That's
right.
What everybody's telling us to eat.
That's
eat
right.
More fresh fruits and vegetables. But wait, those fresh fruits and vegetables require skilled labor, because machines can't do it right now. And traditionally, we have received that skilled labor from Mexico. Where are the Mexican field workers? We'll go to that question when we come back with Tom Omrein right here on the Food Chain Radio program. And you, too, can participate today by dialing 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, question of the day, where are the farm workers? 30 million unemployed, farmers can't find workers. What on earth is going on? Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, where are the farm workers? 30 million of us unemployed, not working, wandering around with nothing to do. And yet our farmers can't find enough workers to pick the crops. And so some of our food is going to waste in the fields. An incredible disparity. Doesn't make any sense to me. Maybe it does to you. If it does, let me know. I'm at 831-479-1080 with Tom Omrein, Barry. Grower, you're not a farmer anymore. You're a grower. What the heck's the difference?
Well, that's an interesting, distinction. I would not call myself a farmer, even myself anymore, because I'm not actively out, you know, driving tractor in the field.
You're not out there growing either.
No, I'm more.
Is farmer a dirty word?
No.
Wait a minute, it was. If you look in Webster's and the third definition. A farmer, it says farmer, 4A, an ignorant rustic,
right.
Yokel, bumpkin, clumsy, stupid fellow, a greenhand, inexperienced or incompetent at the trade at which he is working. And so when I see that the West Coast produce industry becoming growers on ranchers instead of farmers in the fields, I wonder if it's because of that dirty word connotation.
I think it's more has to do with the structure of the business, because there's still a bunch of farmers. I mean, I work with farmers, but because of the complexity.
Who are they?
Well, they're exclusively, most of them were farm workers at one time, and they're actually doing the farming. You know, they came up through the structure of the farming businesses.
I'll tell you what. Well, let's let this one go by, because I'm confused as usual. Yeah. But let's go back to the notion of farm workers, and the fact that for the last several decades, maybe 4 or 5 decades, we've relied on workers from Mexico to harvest and work in our fields, and they're gone, they're going. There are not so many of them anymore. Why are we having trouble? What's going on in Mexico that we're having this trouble getting farm workers from Mexico?
Right. So I think we have to. The first thing I'd say is I wouldn't say that there's not as many farm workers or that they've gone somewhere. It's that the industry's continued to grow at a faster rate than we've been able. And that population has held steady. So you could say in numbers of people, it's probably pretty steady. But in terms of its relationship to total production, it's declined. There's less people.
So agriculture is growing faster than the number of farm workers.
Right, and there's a number of things that have happened, particularly with the supply. You know, in the last, say, in our lifetimes, it's been the supply of labor in the West for agriculture has been from Mexico. There's been times when it was Japanese. There's been a history of the Filipinos, the Chinese. Over time, there's been different ethnic groups. But for now, it's
Montana boys being one of them.
Yeah,
very
okay.
small. But.
So for the Mexican immigration, it's been a source for the last 50 years. Since World War II, What it was for many years was the Bracero program, which was a contracted labor situation between the United States and Mexico, very controlled, which also, interestingly enough, controlled to some extent, particularly in a place like the Paro Valley, the ability to go to the really labor-intensive crops because there was a cap on the labor supply, and that was the Bracero program. And as that program ended, and then we kind of allowed ourselves to lose control of the border, basically, and then we had an influx, particularly in the 1980s.
After the Bracero program, we essentially threw the borders open and said, everybody come in and work.
I think it was more ignored it, because we kind of just turned a blind eye, because we had to have these people, and there was no program.
So instead of throwing the border open, we just kind of turned our back on the border.
Yeah, didn't want to talk about it, didn't want to deal with it. In the 80s, there was a big economic collapse in Mexico, early 80s, and a huge influx of people came
NAFTA.
Over.
NAFTA?
This was way before then. This was
before
then. Oh, yeah. This was when the Mexican oil economy collapsed and everything. And then that led to the when Reagan tried the Immigration Act under Ronald Reagan, where a lot of people were brought in on an amnesty program. Those were this huge flood of people that come in. And that program, functioned pretty well, but the part of the program that wasn't implemented was the border control side of it, which was supposed to be implemented, never was.
It's kind of like all the oxen free, and then we're going to close the border.
Yeah.
But we never did close
never
the border.
Never did.
Yeah.
And so what's happened since then is the population of Mexico has aged much more rapidly, I think, than people would have thought 10 or 15 years ago or 20 years ago. The birth rate there has come down very quick, very fast compared to what people projected. So, and then their economy's improved so much. I mean, it's a different world down there than what it was 30 years ago.
You just came from down there.
Yeah, and you go into central Mexico, there isn't anything like it was 30 years ago. And so it's, aside from their
so
drug
why,
problems.
So why go up to Gringo land when... Why go Norte when Norte ain't there anymore?
Right, and then it's become very dangerous with the drug deal and everything to cross the border. All of that's going on, and so that's limited that supply. And
so now we get them from where? The laborers.
Well, it's still a Mexican population that supplies the labor now. But whether they're going back and forth across the border as much as they used to. In fact, I think they said last year was the first time in, 40 or 50 years, I think, where the net migration was negative. In other words, more Mexicans went back than came over. So there's a change in that activity that demographic or population, and that's led to this because our production continues to go up. Mm-hmm. And
you mentioned earlier in a break that where the Mexican people that are coming across from farther south.
Right, right. And that's been as central and northern Mexico has improved in the economic situation, it's been more, you'll see many more people from southern Mexico and even Central America mixed in with that, which is why you hear about, particularly like down in Greenfield, you hear about the Oaxacan population in Greenfield and these sort of things. So that you wouldn't have seen that 30 years ago. You would have been dealing with, or under the Bracero program, I mean, there was some Oaxacans in that program as well, but you were dealing more with people from central Mexico, and it's moved south to the more the areas that are less developed.
So that trend continues, of course. We'll be having farm workers coming in from Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, it is interesting internal in Mexico where there's a lot of berry production now. 75% of our, roughly 75% of our fresh market blackberry supply is out of Mexico now. A lot of the raspberries and strawberries in the wintertime. On those farms in central Mexico, you have to, in many cases, you have to provide buses, and you're really busing in people from the more remote, you know, villages, really, really true, off of what, you know, what we would call Indians, as opposed to you'd say Native Americans, you know, really native people that maybe don't even speak Spanish. And those people are being, even inside of Mexico, the labor supply has to be moved around because they have shortages as well.
So even in the agricultural districts of central Mexico, they're having to import labor from the poorer regions of Mexico.
Not you know, thousands of miles, but... Mm-hmm.
Bus rides.
But bus rides, certainly, you know. Yes. Huh. Yeah.
So then let's turn back to us. Is it true that we're having such a shortage in agriculture and our growers are actually having to let some food rot in the fields or used for lower purposes, like you say?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, in the strawberry industry and the caneberry, we'll say generally in the caneberry industry this year, absolutely. And it's been a problem all up and down the coast. And
Well, it's a big problem then. So we're going to have to take a quick break here in a little while, but I'd like us to address this basic disparity that I see and probably other people see too, whereas we have, on one hand, 30 million people unemployed here in the United States. The government giving 100 million people various forms of cash for aid of one kind or another. So there's this huge population of people hanging around the street corner in hoodies. And on the other hand, we have agriculture looking for laborers. And are you not paying them anything? Is that what's going on? Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, today we're talking farm labor. Where is our farm labor? Who is going to grow our crops, if not people in the field? You're invited to join us today. We're at 831-479-1080. Michael Olson with Thomas Amrine in the berry fields for years. We will be right back. Well, holy smokes, 30 million people out of work and nobody to pick our crops. What the heck is going on? We're out of work and we're out of workers. What is going on with our country? 831-479-1080. You can tell us there. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio program with Tom Amrine, a berry grower, not a farmer. Thomas no longer drives a tractor. He plows his fields with Cessna 182s, and that makes him a grower instead of a farmer. Thomas, we're looking at the situation where there are people out of work, and there are too few people to work in our fields. What's going on? I mean, why this disparity from your...
Well, I think there's a number of reasons. One is there's probably a bias in the American culture about doing physical hard work. There seems to be some issue with that, which I don't understand. I think it's kind of the population just kind of gotten lazy, and they kind of look down on hard physical work. Don't see a value in it, yet they'll go to pay money to go to Gold's Gym or something they can work out. So I don't know about that. But
people pay for the hard work.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
There's that. Then there's also a cultural aspect to it that, you know, when you do step into the world of agriculture, you step into another world. It's largely a world, you know, it speaks Spanish. It's a Mexican culture, really, in the fields. It's a different culture, a different world, and you have to be able to operate in that. That's difficult for people. They feel uncomfortable with that.
Do you feel uncomfortable there?
No, but you have to learn. You have to learn the culture. If you're not culturally sensitive or aware of what the culture is and respect the language and learn the language and understand the culture and traditions, you're not going to survive as a manager in that environment either. Then the other thing is the labor supply itself. You know, where are the people that are out of work in the general economy, as opposed to where is the strawberries, right? So, yes, I know there's a lot of people out of work in Stockton right now, and a lot of people having a hard time up there, but the strawberries are in Santa Maria or they're in Watsonville. And so there's also that issue, just where's the labor supply versus the work?
Can't we grow strawberries in Stockton?
No, you can't. They can grow some other things in Stockton, but those things are highly mechanized. It's a little different, but for, you know, the farm labor here is kind of focused... you know, at least here really on the West, you know, I had a number here that said, strawberries are 0.5% of the acreage in California, and they are 10% of the labor supply in farming. So there's 53,000 people picking strawberries, at that level in the strawberry industry. So, you know, it's very labor-intensive relative to other commodities.
Mm-hmm. And what about other commodities then? Are there commodities having labor shortages as well?
There is. And, of course, there's competition internally here because we're only talking about strawberries, but there's also the raspberry industry, particularly in the Santa Cruz County, and then, of course, the vegetable industry. And, you know, shortly we're going to start digging our strawberry plants up in Klamath Basin. You know, there's got to be, I would guess, you've got to get about 20,000 people set up
there
to do that work, which is about a 5-week or 6-week season. You know, those people have to be mobilized. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens this year with that, because you've got to mobilize a lot of people into a very remote area to get that work done.
Could we get them from Stockton? I guess the question is, why can't we get white people to work on farms?
Yeah, it's, well, that's okay. Always, you know,
I just got this post on the Metro Farm forums from Patricia Rorabar, who is from the University of Arizona, and she teaches their agriculture there. And she says, my students are coming to me after graduation and saying I can't find a job. Well, there is work in the country to be had. We need to organize our kids and put them to work. It would give them an opportunity to serve. It would teach them work ethic. It would provide them with work experience they could put on a resume. We could get our crops grown and harvested. Why can't we put our youth to work when they're getting out of college and they have nothing to do? Half of the college graduates have nothing to do.
Yeah, that's always, you know, it's difficult because are they
too smart to work?
Well, I don't know. You probably have to ask them. You know, it's really difficult because we're trying to get people out to work. We outreach. We have ads on the radios now. Signs. I'm sure everybody's seen the signs around the Pajaro Valley. People looking for work. Farmers putting up signs that they need work.
You know, help wanted.
The wages are, I've got, you know, the studies here that, you know, the states put out and whatnot. You know, the strawberry work pickers are earn more than retail jobs. You know, it's not a pay problem.
Last week we had Ann Lopez from the Center for Farm Worker Families, who said there is a farm worker shortage because farmers or growers are not paying farm workers enough. Well, they're paying them minimum wages. You're starving them in the fields. True.
Well, they're not paying. I mean, if somebody's paying minimum wage, they don't have anybody working for them down here. I mean, not in this valley. So that's just completely, you know, that's just not even a credible comment. But, you know, if you paid more, would you get more people? Well, okay, maybe we would. How much more are we going to pay? And we get these people now. How much more are we going to sell the fruit for? And what's going to happen to the per capita consumption of strawberries when that retail price goes up even a dime? And even with a dime per pound at the retail level, you're going to affect consumption.
Mm-hmm.
That's just flat out. I mean, it's a formula. It's almost mathematical. It's basic economics.
So the only thing that will be cheap enough to eat is genetically engineered
soybeans, which one farmer
can grow 1,000 acres, right?
Yeah.
Maybe we could have strawberry-flavored soybean meal.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, let's go to the phones, 831-479-1080. What do you think, folks? Where are the farm workers? Let's ask Chili Bob himself. Are you there, Chili Bob? I better have turned this up. Hey, Chili Bob, are you a farmer or a grower?
I'm kind of both. I don't fly like Tom does. As a matter of fact, I'm out in the field right now looking at onions, Tom.
There you go. Very good.
So I know Tom pretty well. We sit on a board together. But you know, you mentioned about raising the prices. And, you know, right now there's a limited labor supply, Michael. And if our operation was to pay 10 cents or 20 cents more an hour, all we're going to do is steal labor from our next door neighbor. And that's, so you're not adding to the pool. You're just, you know, taking from back and forth. But the point I wanted to make was, you know, talking to someone yesterday about the difference in the amount of labor required to harvest crops. like celery, for instance, you've got 4 to 5 people per acre is required to harvest celery. You start getting into the cane berries, and you're looking at 20 to 30 people per acre to harvest this crop. So the more cane berries that are coming in, it's going to put more pressure on the available labor we have right now. So it's going to make it tougher and tougher. And Tom, you know, we're seeing more and more cane berries, more hoop operations going on out there. So it's going to just put more pressure, isn't it?
Agreed. Absolutely.
Hey, Chili Bob, can you hang for a second?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to have to take a hard break here, but we can come back. I want to ask Chili Bob the big question. We've got 30 million people unemployed out there. We're paying 100 million people, the government is, various forms of cash to because they're not working or they're going through hard times. And our farmers are in the field. So, Chili Bob, I'm going to ask you, why can't we get people to go to work in your fields? This is the food chain. Michael Olson, Chili Bob Martin down there in the southern Salinas Valley. We have Tom Omrein, and we have you, 831-479-1080. And so now the question to Chili Bob himself. My goodness, Chili Bob, there are millions of people doing nothing. Why can't we get them to work in the fields?
Well, thank you for giving me a minute to think about this, but I don't know how politically correct I could be on this answer, but if you think about it, actually there never has been a time, at least in my history of 60 years being down here farming, that that I'm aware of anybody being successful as a farm worker that doesn't come from the Mexican culture.
Are you kidding? You mean in 60 years you've never found a gringo that could work in the fields?
Not as somebody who's in the field actually with the backbreaking labor, the hoeing, thinning, weeding, harvesting. They just don't want to do the work. But it is taxing. It's physically taxing, and these people, you know, like Tom says, they have their own culture. They're people. They work together. These crews work together. They live together. They do pretty much everything together. And you see that on the weekends when they have their flea market things in King City every Sunday. There's hundreds of them that come down and enjoy the day together. But part of the problem is that our government, if they don't want to work, our government gives them money not to work, and so. It's about hunger. If people are hungry, they'll find work, and they're gonna do what it takes to keep food on the table, but clothes on their backs. But when they don't have to, I mean, would you?
No, I wouldn't. But I had to a number of times in my life, and it really did help me realize what I didn't want to do in life. Having jobs like that was a big part of my life. And it's like the gal here at the University of Arizona says, if kids were required to work in the fields, maybe they would come away with a better appreciation of what it takes to get by in the world. I don't know. Thomas, what do you think?
That's a very good point. A very good point.
Chili Bob, thank you very much. Going to move on down the line here. Appreciate your call. And let's pick up Mike. Mike, are you with us? Hello? Mike, are you there? I guess not. Well, let's try Alice. Are you there, Alice? Oh, now I know what the deal is. There you go.
Okay. Hello?
You're on. We'll pick up Mike in a minute, too.
I live in Watsonville, and I've lived in Watsonville just about all my life.
Just a second, for those who are listening elsewhere, Watsonville is at the heart of the Pajaro Valley, which is one of the nation's, I guess, berry bowl, right?
Yes.
There's no land that produces more higher value crops, I don't think, in the world than the Pajaro Valley, but I might be wrong. Go ahead, Alice.
Well, when I was young, and I'm 63 years old, when I was young, we used to have a thing that was called work permit. And you got a work permit at 12 years old, and you could go out to the fields and pick berries. You could pick bush berries, you could pick raspberries, you could pick strawberries. You had your work permit. Well, when Cesar Chavez came along and did this Farm Workers Union, which got rid of our the Vucero program and stuff, it looked like the kids quit coming out to the fields. And, I mean, like, when we were when we were farming or growing berries and stuff, we had mothers would come out with their children, and they would have, you know, four or five kids come out. Maybe they'd have some cousins, and they'd come out and pick berries and do stuff like that. And then I noticed back in the late 70s, it started changing with Cesar Chavez, and we didn't see the kids come out to the fields anymore.
Thomas, you were one of those kids.
Yeah, I think that what happened about that time, particularly, you know, in the late 70s there, one thing that did change during that, at that time with the lettuce, at that time I guess it was the lettuce deal, the lettuce strikes and all that, it was quite violent. There was quite a bit of violence in the fields. So that really wasn't, it came to be a place that wasn't for kids. I'm trying to remember which summer it was. There was actually quite a bit of violence down there in the fields with the labor strife, you know, and it did become a place where wasn't probably a good place for kids, and it did change after that. But there was also a lot of change in regulation and liability issues with the government and child labor, and that's also gotten to be a very difficult problem for us now.
Boy, I would suspect if the government caught you with kids out in the field, they would take you to a concentration camp in New Hampshire or something.
Yeah, it's not a good thing at all. And the retailers the big national retailers are extremely sensitive right now about use
labor
in the field. Because we can still take the work permit and everything if we want, but most people don't want to touch it. The liability is so high that there's some mistake or something happens to a young person in the field.
So here we have a situation then where the government is paying 100 million people not to work and not allowing kids to work in the fields. Essentially, or am I wrong?
It's legally possible, but it's from a business standpoint, a practicality standpoint, it's not a good idea.
Alice, how do you define that? How do you describe that disparity?
It's probably true, because I remember in the 70s, there was a lot of violence out there. I mean, I can remember coming with having people come in and run over the water pipes and different things, and come in and salt our and put sugar in our gas tanks and our tractors and stuff. I remember all of that, and I remember at that point, then things really started changing. You had more families that went sharecropping and stuff like that after that. But, I mean, before that, I mean, you know, you didn't have any problem. Well, we didn't at the time when we were farming, that we didn't have any problems with getting people to come and pick our berries or come and pick tomatoes or come and pick zucchini, squash, or whatnot. We were a truck farm.
Well, Alice,
operation.
Thank you very much for the call. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back to the phones with everybody and Thomas, please do stay tuned.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, we have so much to talk about and so little time to talk about it. My goodness sakes. First thing we're going to do is go to the phones, 831-479-1080. Talk with Rory. Rory is in the berry fields as well. Welcome to the food chain. You're talking with Tom Omrein, Michael Olson. Rory, go ahead.
Tom, I know this last summer there was a lot of runners on the plants. You know, technical name is stolons, and that partly because of the extremely cold winter promoted a lot of vegetative growth. And, the labor shortage, there wasn't enough guys to cut those runners, and that taxes the plant and reduces fruit production. But I thought, man, what a great summer job. Paid some high school kids $10 an hour to come out and just cut runners. You know, most kids could do that. And I thought, what a waste that it's become so difficult to employ, you know, high schoolers in the field. But it'd be a perfect summer job. Pull weeds, cut runners. So
why is it so difficult? You know, this is the same question Patricia Rohrabaugh, who is a PhD professor at University of Arizona, just put on the food chain forums at metrofarm.com. Why can't we hire the kids? It will give them experience. It would give them a sense, a little bit of dignity. It would give them everything they need to move on in the world. You know, they would have work experience. They would know how to work.
They could have had full-time summer work, 8-10 hours a day all week long. So I'll just toss that out. The other thing is...
Well, wait a minute. Why can't they? Why can't we hire them?
Michael, I mean, look at... I think you had a guest in here last week, and I didn't hear it, but based on some of the comments I heard, though, that's when you've got that kind of attitude that the growers are these evil people that are abusing kids, and you've got retailers that are sensitive to those kind of charges. You get one out of place photograph. Mm-hmm. Of what appears to be an underage kid,
maybe a grower with an electrically shocking a child.
Well, yeah, but or one poorly filled out document, or one falsely a false claim on the document that you didn't catch a birth date right, or somebody lied about their birth date, and you don't catch that,
you're in trouble.
You are done. That opens up a regulatory hornet's nest that it could destroy the business. People need to understand that there's a regulatory and a political aspect to this in California, and an attitude toward growers and growers in general, farmers, if you will, what they want to say, it's a hostile environment. It's a hostile environment to work in politically and the regulatory deal at the end is political. Because it's political appointees that run these. When you change administration, you change the leaders of these.
The political climate changes. And it's anti-grower right now, for sure.
So let me ask you both this
real quick.
Okay.
Real quick, I'm going to toss out there, and then I'm going to bail. But the average crew on some of the ranches I was working on in the peak production that went on for nearly 2 months straight, the average crew. Crew member was picking 17 to 18 crates an hour all week, 10-hour days. So Tom can tell you what that works out to in dollars per hour, roughly.
Let me ask you a really quick question before we have to go. We're almost out of time. But have we become a nation so rigid that we have become so brittle?
Yeah, we're inflexible. Absolutely.
We're inflexible and so breakable.
The growers had a need this summer to just cut runners. Perfect job for high school kids. Could have handled it. Doesn't take a brain surgeon.
Thank you. Out of time. Thank you all so much for tuning in. This has been the Food Gen. Remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.